So the scriptures always tell us that we need purity of mind. And what is this purity of mind? And people ask, when will I get it? When will I get this purity of mind? Is there a time limit? And some people say, well, when I reach 65, when I retire, then I'll get it. Or maybe when I start attending classes, then I will get it. Or when I read Bhagavad Gita fully one time, then my mind will be totally purified. Or is there somebody sitting somewhere in the Himalayas and you go to him and then he will write a certificate to whomsoever it may concern, this person has attained purity of mind. Is it something like that? It's like asking, how long will it take me to learn music? Again, it depends on your aptitude. Depends on your previous training, how much music training you have, how much aptitude you have, how much effort you put in, what kind of teacher you have, all that determines. Or people say, how long will I take to learn Sanskrit? You know, that's a very favorite question. People who start on this path always ask. Again, it depends what level of Sanskrit you want to learn. Do you want to just learn basic Sanskrit, some simple words? Do you want to be able to interpret the scriptures? Or do you want to be able to converse in Sanskrit? So it depends on what level you want to reach. In fact, Sanskrit grammar is so complicated that they say years of full-time effort is still not enough. There is this much, this voluminous and evolved is this language. At the same time, Sanskrit is the most scientific language in the world where there is no exceptions. Like in English, but and put, there is nothing like that. Everything exactly follows the rules, and that's why Sanskrit is used in computers, because it's absolutely precise. So in talking about purity of mind, people always, and even the teachers will say, you know, in spirituality, most important is to purify your mind. So last week we had talked about it. In fact, the last few weeks, we have been studying the topic of Karma Yoga, where Bhagavan tells us that through action, see, action we all have to do. Nobody can stop acting. As soon as you wake up in the morning, you know, you first go and brush your teeth and get ready, and then you have breakfast. Even if you are very rich and you have servants taking care of you, you still have to at least put the food in your mouth. You may not have to cook. So actions are necessary even for maintenance of the body. Bhagavan says in the third chapter, Sharir Yatra Pichate Na Prasidyet Akarmanaha. So without action, even you cannot maintain your body. So what kind of actions we should do? And then we heard about the topic of Karma Yoga, where the action which are dedicated to the higher, dedicated to the Lord or to my family, to my community, such actions purify the mind by reducing I and mine, reducing my selfishness. So with the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts. So my equipment is body, mind, and intellect. And we are the vasanas, my selfish tendencies. And Om represents God's presence, God who is within us. So the goal of life is to reduce vasanas, and that is called purity of mind. And through Karma Yoga is the best path to purify the mind. But then people, we are all result oriented. What will I get? You know, I'm coming to this class. What am I getting? I am going to do some puja. What am I going to get? By reading the scriptures, what am I going to get? So these two verses are Phala Shruti, where Bhagavan tells us what will happen by studying the Bhagavad Gita. So these are very, very beautiful verses which give us the goal of the knowledge. What will happen as I study and what will be the final result? So that is explained in verse number 52 and 53. So chapter 2, verse number 52.
Yada te moha kalilam buddhir vyatita rishyati तदा गन्तासि निर्वेदम् श्रोतव्यस्य श्रुतस्य च.
So in Sanskrit and all languages, they have this when and then. Like when you get up in the morning, then you do this. So here also Bhagavan says, yada, when they, for you, moha kalilam. Kalilam, moha kalilam means this mire of delusion. What is mire? Mire is like a swamp, like a quicksand. Once you get in, you can't get out, you keep sinking. So delusion is compared to a quicksand or a mire or a boggy swamp where once you put your foot in, you keep sinking, you can't get out. So moha kalilam. So when moha kalilam, this mire of delusion, buddhi vyatitarishyati, te buddhi, when your buddhi vyatitarishyati completely crosses this mire of delusion. So suppose there is a swamp of delusion, and if you can cross it, maybe you can go around it, or you have a find a bridge to go over it, or whatever way if you can go over. So when you can cross this mire of delusion, so it's not a mechanical swamp, but it is a mental swamp of delusion. Yati tarishyati, when your buddhi, when your intellect completely crosses that, yada, then tada, then what will happen? Gantasi nirvedam. Gantasi means you shall go to, you shall reach, you shall attain nirvedam. Ved means to know, but here nirvedam means vairagya, means dispassion. So when you cross this ocean of delusion, it's like the sansar moha sagar hai, it's like a ocean of delusion. And how will I cross? Oh Bhagwan, aapki meri naiya le ja sakte. Only Lord, you can take my boat across this ocean of delusion. So that's why delusion is compared in many ways as something difficult to cross. And the Lord's grace is required. Of course, our effort is required too. God's grace only descends on those who put their effort. So once you cross over this delusion, then gantasi nirvedam, then you shall attain vairagya. Over what will I attain vairagya? Shrotavyasya shrutasya cha. Shrutasya means what you have heard. Shrotavyasya means what you will hear. So not only you will get vairagya or dispassion from what you have already heard, but what even you will hear in the future, even your whole life, you will get total vairagya, dispassion, detachment. So we'll spend some time talking about moha and maya. So moha is delusion. And why are we under delusion? So Bhagavan says in the Bhagavad Gita, Devi hesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. So he says that there is this creative power of mind called maya. Bhagavan says that, and it's daivi, it is divine. Mama maya duratyaya, this power of mind is very difficult to cross. And that's why they say, oh, hum moh maya ke jaal mein phase hue hain. You know, when we go to the temple, we ask God, so but how can I be free? So mameva ye prapadyante, I am caught in this net of maya, and one who surrenders to me, maya metam tarantite. So Bhagavan says, you come, meri sharan me aao, come surrender to me, and that is the way to go beyond this delusion of maya. So maya is not only the creative power of the Lord, but has two other very important properties called avarana and vikshep. Avarana means covering or veiling, and vikshep means agitation. So how was this world created? See, God alone was, everything was that. Now from that, he had to create, he means or she or that, whatever that consciousness, Brahman, created this world and created duality. Now there is one alone, everything is that. chairs, people, fan, light, everything is that Brahman, that Bhagwan, that consciousness. But why do we see two? Why do we see multiplicity? We don't see two, we see many. She is different from me. I like this person. I don't like this person. This is my house. This is my tree. This is my neighbors. So I and my, this duality and multiplicity, we see because of the power of Maya. So to create the world, this delusion had to be brought in. Otherwise we would just straight away see God everywhere. Then there is no doubt. In fact, it is said that in one of the scriptures I was reading, that in the Pranami faith, there the Mahamati Pranath ji says that is a, that it talks about duality. There is, you know, that me and God. So there it is said that we are, all of us are females. Even men or women, we are all females because the soul is female, the Atma. And then there is one Paramatma, the one Supreme Lord, and we were living very happily with him. And then souls got bored of happiness. Every time everything is good, you know, whatever you want, apple, suddenly apple comes. You want Coke, you don't even have to drink Coke. The taste comes in your mouth. You just clap like that. And then you go in the evening and Urvashi and Menka dancing. All the time happiness, you know, we want to experience variety. So God said, okay, I'll create this world of Maya, but I'm promising you, you will go there and forget me. I said, no. How can we forget you? Because we love you so much and we have always been with you for thousands of years. You think we will ever? I'm telling you, you will forget me. We said, no, we promise you, we won't forget. And so he created this beautiful world for us. In Christianity, they call it Garden of Eden, for us to enjoy, experience and go back. But in this process of enjoying and experiencing, A, we forgot our home, you know, where we came from. And then we got into this I and my, you know, selfishness, ego, fighting, my land, your land, my country, your country, one country is, you know, attacking another country. So this duality was created for us to enjoy. It's like the, you know, dramatist creates a drama. And, you know, in that, in the drama, there is a hero and there is a villain and then there is a heroine and then they marry and then the villain comes and create problems and ultimately happy ending, you know. Everybody, hero, villain goes to jail, hero, heroine get married and everybody lives happily forever after. So the dramatist creates the drama, but if we get involved in the drama, then it is a problem. You go, you enjoy the drama. You don't have to start crying and feel sad for the heroine. Or in the movies, we get so sad, you know, oh, this guy, he's so bad. Look how he's missed. There's nothing that, you know, they're all, but we get so caught up in the movie, especially in these soap operas, which go on and on. And then there's one sister-in-law who is so horrible and the poor heroine is suffering. And every time, why does she do? Nothing. They are all good friends. They're just doing a play for us. So similarly, this world is a play. We came here to enjoy and we forgot our home. So Maya has two shakti, avarana and vikshep. So our intellect gets covered. That's called avarana shakti. Means I cannot see. It's like a veil on the truth. The truth, the Lord within and everywhere is one. But there is a veil of covering called avarana. And when I don't see the Lord, then I project. That my mind projects. That is called vikshepa. So when I don't see God everywhere, then I project. This is my neighbor. This is my friend. This, he belongs to my religion, my community. I am superior. He's inferior. So when you don't see the world as one, that's when you project all the differences. And that's difference between us and saints. In the case of saints, they see everything as that. There was, I think I might have told you this story before, but when, if you go to this Chardham Yatra, Neeru was telling me, she went to, I think, Gangotri, and on the way, Swamiji tells her, you need to meet this old lady, simple old lady. She's walking around there, just, you know, in a white sari, and she says, and every man she sees, she embraces him, oh, this is my Krishna. And every woman she sees, she embraces, this is my Radha. So for her, the whole world is nothing but Krishna and Radha. doesn't matter which caste, which community, which country, which color. For her, everybody is the Lord himself. Even Tulsidas, he says, Siya Ram mein sab jab jani, karhu pranam, jodi jukpani. He says, I see the whole world as Ram and Sita. So everybody I see, I bow down to because my Lord is in them. But you and I, we see differences because of the avarana and the vikshep. So the goal of this is to go beyond this mire of delusion. This delusion that I am separate, and we'll talk a little more about that. And then he says, Shrotavya and Shrutasya. So what you have heard and what you have not yet heard, even whatever you will hear, so far what we have heard is since we were little, okay, in last 40 years, 50 years, I have heard some things. When they say heard in our Vedas or in the spirit, when they say one sense, they mean all five. So when they say heard, he doesn't have to say heard, seen, smelled, tasted and touched, because the goal of the spiritual text is brevity, it's shortness. So when it says heard, it is understood what I've heard, seen, smelled, tasted and touched. Or like when they say the organ of action, like speech, they'll say it includes all the organs, hands, feet, speech, genital organs, excretory organs. Or when they say mind, they include all the antakarana, mind, intellect, memory, ego. So the point is that when they say heard and not yet heard, what it means is what I have experienced and whatever I will experience in the past, such a person gets vairagya, gets detachment. How? We'll talk about that. And what is the moha? So the first moha is body is me, and the world is real and is here for my happiness. So we always think that when did my journey of my life start? When I came from my mother's womb. So that's when my journey started. And when will it end? When I go to my tomb, when I'm buried or cremated. So that is how we think our life journey is. But if you look at the whole picture, the scriptures tell us this is not your first life. In fact, this universe is not even the first universe. There have been, as we heard from Nimalji, this is not the first Big Bang. Before Big Bang, there was another Big Bang. And then billions of years ago, there was another, and on and on. So this is not my first life. This is not the first time the universe came. So me, the individual, this body is, yes, has this particular journey. But if I say I am the Atma, I am the consciousness, and that is the goal of spirituality, that you are this Om, this consciousness, which is your higher nature. Lower nature is body, mind and intellect, and Om is my higher nature. So always remember that. So the first delusion is that I am this body and my journey is only this much, 60, 70, 80, 90 years. Uske baad, I'm done, chutti. No, the journey keeps going on and on until you realize the truth. Until you realize I am Atman, I am Brahman, I am that consciousness. Until then, you keep on going. And then the world is real in the sense it is a projection upon that consciousness. Brahman alone is appearing as all of these. And the world is not here for my pleasure, not here for my enjoyment, for me to have fun. But the world is here for me to serve and to realize the truth. So these are the two ignorances we have, that the body is me and the world is real and it is here for my pleasure. When we say the world is not real, does not mean this chair does not exist or this fan does not exist. But what we say is a relative reality. The chair was not there, say 10 years ago before we bought it, it was not there. It was in some plastic factory as plastic. And then from that, this chair was created. And then after a few years, when the chair gets old, we'll get rid of it and get new ones. So is called a relative reality, not an absolute reality. Same way this universe, 4 billion years ago, it was not there. And then the Big Bang happened and this universe came. And then in a few billion years, they tell us all the stars will become cold. They will not have any energy and the world will end. So world has a temporary reality, that the absolute reality is Om, the consciousness, which we can call Brahman, call it Jesus or Krishna or Buddha or Shiva or Mother Saraswati, but that consciousness, Brahman, is the eternal. And as we said, the duality was required to create the world. Otherwise, we would not see the play of this world. And moha is also called viparit buddhi. Viparit means opposite. What is right, I think the opposite. What is correct, I think the opposite. And that's what people say, why can't you think straight? You know, we tell our kids that because they are thinking the opposite. So that is called moha. This Ramayana story of Sugriva, you must have heard, but the way I heard it from Swami Bodhatmananda ji is how it applies to our life. And the story of Ramayana we all know, but those who don't, I'll just briefly summarize that Ram and Lakshman ji were going through the forest to look for Sita ji, who had been kidnapped by the evil king. And on the way, they came to this mountain. I think, what is the mountain called? I forget the name of the mountain. Kishkindha was the kingdom. Rishyamukh mountain. Yes, so they come to this mountain. And there are two brothers, Vali and Sugriv. And Vali is the older brother and he has captured the kingdom. And he wants to kill Sugriv so that he can be the total emperor. And Sugriv runs away from his older brother, because in those days that used to happen, one brother will kill another and all that. So Sugriv was hiding in the mountain and afraid that soldiers will find me and kill me. And so Sugriv was hiding, and then he saw this he saw these two handsome young men from the mountain. From the top he was watching. Ram and Lakshman ji were coming. And he said, who are these people? If they are Vali's people, I have to run away. So he sends Hanumanji. Hanumanji, go find out who they are. So Hanumanji changes. He could do that. He could change his shape. He had this ability. And so he goes as a Brahmin and starts talking to them. Who are you? Why are you here? And he finds out that these are good people. They are not Vali's people. So he goes back and tells Sugriva that these are not Vali's people. They are good. In fact, he recognizes the Lord himself. You know, Hanumanji had that ability. He says, the Lord of the universe is here in this form of these two young men. So he tells Sugriv, we need to make friends with them. So Sugriv does. He invites them and they makes friends with them. And then he explains that Vali has not only thrown me out of the kingdom, but has even taken over my wife. And, you know, Vali was quite selfish, so he said, I am hiding from him. So Ramchandraji said, if I help you get back your kingdom, he said, if you help me get back my kingdom, whatever you need, I'll do. I know you're looking for Sita ji. I will send my Hanumanji to find her. I will send my soldiers, to help you. Whatever you need, I will do. So Ramchandraji helps him to overcome Vali. Now Sugriv had been living in the forest and mountains for many years and had, and away from his wife and away from all the palace pleasures. So for next few months, he's just indulging and enjoying himself, stays in his bedroom, doesn't come out for days on end, weeks. Food is all brought there. So Ramchandraji says, okay, he has been suffering, let him enjoy. But after a while, it's like it's never ending. And Ramchandraji said, I have work to do. I need to find Sitaji. Even though Ramchandraji was God, but he was acting like a human being. He said, I need to find Sitaji. And so he talks to Sugriv, and Sugriv says, what promise? I didn't promise you anything. He promptly forgets. So then Hanumanji finds out. He says, hey, Murkh, hey, you fool. Whom you are trying to cheat? This is the Lord of the universe himself. And don't forget, he still has that arrow with which he shot Vali. So he still has that arrow. So don't forget that. And so then immediately Sugriv comes to his senses. And then, of course, the story goes on. He helps. But our condition is exactly like Sugriv. You know, we came here for a particular purpose, to realize God and reach. But we promptly forgot. And so we are so involved in the world, in acquiring, possessing, enjoying, khana, pina, maja karo, who knows. God will see some other time. First of all, we don't even believe God exists, heaven. Even if he does, it's okay. You know, later on, maybe, you know, we'll. So, and Hanumanji represents satsang. Satsang is the company of saints. Sat means good. Sang means company. Company of the right, company of the good. That's why satsang is so much valued. Like this whole week, this past week, we listened to beautiful discourses by Vimalji. So company of saints and company of not only saints, but even good books. Good books, good talks. Even on the internet, you can find so many, you know, on the YouTube, so many good talks. So all that is satsang. So Hanumanji represents that, and that is what wakes us up to our true nature. And the detachment should be to all objects. All objects, but what we do, our detachment is very, very selective. Like say a family goes shopping. You know, there's a father, mother and son. And they are shopping. And the mother immediately stops at a jewelry store. Father says, jewelry? You already have so much jewelry. And the son stops at Xbox. And father says, you have an Xbox. He says, no, no, but this is the latest one. And then the father, I am not interested in jewelry or Xbox. Where he gets stuck in electronics. Because he has a cell phone and he wants a new cell phone. So for him, he has complete detachment for jewelry and Xbox. For that boy, he has complete detachment for electronics and jewelry. And for the mother, she has complete detachment for Xbox and electronics. But each one of them is so attached to one thing. It is not, does not mean that one shouldn't possess objects, but being dependent on objects and constantly wanting more is called bondage. And we have to develop detachment. Detachment means if it is there, I'm fine. If it is not there, I'm fine. That one has to develop. Even heaven, see, people have detachment for this world. They say, but heaven, if I go, there I'll have so much fun. So rishis say even heaven is a bondage. You need to be detached to everything and not depend on happiness. Even body one should not be attached to, and one should not spend the whole time. Body is my equipment to work, and when it is time to drop the body, I'll willingly drop. So talking about dropping the body, so this man, in his will, he had distributed his, you know, wealth to everybody, and he put 100,000 for his funeral. He said, this 100,000 has to be used for my funeral. He wanted a grand, elaborate funeral. So he put instructions. So the wife carried out the instructions, and afterwards her friend asked her, did you spend 100,000 on the funeral? She said, yep, I did. He told me to. So he said, how did you spend 100,000 on a funeral? She says, well, 15,000 was to buy the plot. Okay. 2,000 I gave the church. Okay. 2,000 I spent on food. 19,000. And 1,000 for flowers. 20,000. So what happened to the other 80? She said, with the other 80,000, I bought a memorial stone. She says, you bought a memorial stone for 80,000? She says, yeah, here it is. So she bought a memorial. So that's what happens. We get attached. So like if I have an MP3, then I get attached to an MP4. When will it come out? Or I have this computer and, you know, this is used to be what, 4 gigabyte and then 80 gigabyte and 100. Keep making more and more, and we are always the latest iPhone, the latest this, the latest that. So the idea is that one should be relatively content. Just because my neighbor bought a new car, if my car is running fine, why do I have to run and buy a new car if my house is adequate? But constantly looking for more and more and better and better, and if I have extra money, use it for service rather than getting more. Like in a newspaper also, you know, some people like the main news. Some people only look for the sports. In a Sunday paper, they'll just pull out the sports and throw away the rest. Somebody will only read the comics, or somebody will read the local, somebody will read international. So each one is attached to one thing and others are not important. So the point is that not that one should not read the newspaper, but the point is that being attached to one thing and getting so much fascinated is the problem. And that's what Bhagwan says. Once you get over this delusion, yadate moha kalilam buddhir vyati tarishyati tada gantasi nirvedam shrotavyasya shrutasya cha. So you will develop total vairagya, and that is required. Without vairagya, spiritual progress is not possible. You cannot be attached to objects and be attached to God at the same time. You have to slowly detach from objects and attach to God. And that is the essence of this verse. That once you develop vairagya, once you go beyond this delusion, then no matter what comes, it cannot bind you, it cannot make you dependent. So again, detachment does not mean we don't love, but we don't depend on anything for our happiness. I have said that before, but I think that's something that people always ask. Oh, detach me, I should not love my child, or I should not love. No, not like that. But the dependence. So this is the beautiful verse. Any questions? Any comments?
Everyone has some kind of a desire that motivates them to do something. If there is no desire, then there would be no motivation.
Right. Right.
And that person is going to be stopped being social, because
right,
there's nothing that person can give, or maybe not give, but not take. So there would be nothing for others to offer or her.
Right.
And that person, what do you call him, like an unsocial?
Right.
Or
right.
Antisocial, or this, you know, a sadhu.
Right.
Who is not part of the world.
Right. I think that will come in this verse. In the later verse, Arjuna asks the same question. How does a wise person live? But we are not saying that everybody has to become a sadhu. We are not saying that. You know, if you have that much vairagya, where you can give up everything like Buddha did, he gave up his kingdom, his wife, his son, because he wanted moksha. But most of us don't have that. So we have to work in the world. We have to take care of our family. We have to. And we are not saying that your life should become boring or dull, or you should not have fun, or you should not go out for pizza, or not meet friends, or become antisocial, live, you know, put on this orange clothes and let your hair grow and wander the forest. If that is your vairagya, that is fine. For most of us, what the Bhagavad Gita tells us is how to live in the world. And he just, nowhere does Bhagwan say that you have to leave. In fact, that's what Arjuna wanted to do. He wanted to go to the forest and meditate. And Bhagwan tells him, no, your duty at this moment is to fight against evil. And when he talks about bhakta, he talks about that he is the one who loves everybody. Adveshta sarva bhutanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahankara. Samadukha sukha kshami. So who is my devotee? Advaishta sarva bhutanam. He does not hate anybody. He is loving, maitra, karuna, without I and mine. Samadukha sukha, balanced in pain and pleasure, and kshami. So devotee of Bhagwan does not mean that you become useless and you just stay in the temple and all the time pray, or you go to the forest. You do your duties with a different attitude, number one. Number two, your number one desire in this life should be to attain God. That has to be, that's the essential message of all the scriptures. That I am here to realize God. That's why I am here. That is why I got this human body. That's why I have the intellect. Because having a house and having family and bringing up children and teaching them, even sparrows do that. I've talked so many times. Even a male and a female sparrow, they meet. They build a beautiful nest, they have children, they teach them to fly, and they die. If that's all I am going to do with my life, get married, have children, get old and die, build a big house, what have I accomplished? Nothing more than a sparrow or a monkey or a buffalo. The idea of human birth is that I have to realize. So my overwhelming desire should be to realize. I should work. We are not saying that you work. In fact, the Taittiriya Upanishad says that get plenty of money. Work hard. They're not saying that don't work. In Taittiriya Upanishad, when the teacher gives advice to the student, we always give that to the seniors when they graduate. He says, after you leave my ashram, go out and work and be the best you can be. Be the most successful doctor or engineer or lawyer or whatever your profession is, be the best and earn plenty, but do not earn only for yourself, earn for society. And he nowhere they say that you're not supposed to enjoy life. In fact, a spiritual person enjoys life much more. You and me, we need objects to make us happy. He's happy by himself. If he finds objects, he's happy. If he doesn't find, he's actually enjoys life much more than you and I do. And he's much more social because he sees God in everybody, like that lady. She embraced everybody. So is she enjoying life or is she suffering? You know, so, but your question is excellent. It's a very good question and it's a very common doubt, you know, and we all have this doubt. So thank you for asking. Was I able to answer?
I think so.
Thank you, yes.
So you're saying it's healthy to strike a balance in life. Any extremities are unhealthy, right?
Yes.
But we should have aspirations. We should, like you said, be motivated and have desires, which is healthy, but to have a balance.
Absolutely.
I mean, not be completely drawn or dependent on objects or materialistic things. But of course, we all need that.
Right.
So striking a balance is what is, I think, a little bit of a challenge. Like, what's too much or what's mm-hmm. too less?
Right.
And how do you balance your whole life? And that's where
right.
I think the challenge is.
Yeah, no, I think your point absolutely right. Moderation is the key. You know, whatever I'm enjoying, whatever I'm doing, I need to do in moderation. And also there's a stage in life. See, when you're a student, 25 years, your job is to study. Then 25 to 50, my job is to take care of my children, earn wealth, work hard, be successful. But as I cross 50, and once my children go to college and all, then rather than chasing after them, you know, every weekend, leave them alone. Let them, when they need help, I am available. Or as they get older, people get so sad, you know, my child doesn't call me, he's gone to college. Leave him alone. You know, he's when he needs help, he will call, you know. So what I'm saying is not that one should not love it, but then to get so depressed that the child has gone. And then once you have reached 50 and the child is gone to college, then you can spend more time. But even before 50, the earlier we start, the better it is. Because ultimately, my goal of life is self-realization. Once I understand that, then whatever age I am, whatever stage I am in, that has to become my number one goal. And everything I do should help me in my goal. That is the idea. Like a marathon runner or an Olympic athlete, you know, for 8 years, everything they do is only for that gold medal. How they eat, how they live, how they exercise, what people they associate with. Everything is built towards that gold medal 8 years from now. So if my goal is spiritual realization, then I should slowly change the direction of my life. Like they say, now you put a dam, but the water is getting wasted. You put a dam and then direct it towards the fields where it can be useful. So my energy at this moment is all being directed in the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. So put a dam and direct it towards God, so where it is needed. So slowly I have to change my focus of my life. That is the idea. What is my main purpose? What is my main goal? Yes?
Our innermost layer, right? So mm-hmm. body. And but they say that, and everyone is bundled up, sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. So as desires are there, that's part of leading to doing activity. But if you recognize your desires and move more towards sattvic desires, then that will be a better way to address them.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, because tamasic is, you know, we're destructive. Rajasic is selfish. But from there, like she said, slowly move towards sattva. purity and where my desire is not only for me but for all. So the more time I can give in service, that much more sattvic I am. And having the right knowledge, sattva means knowledge and purity both. So reading the scriptures and applying them will make my actions more sattvic. Absolutely. Thank you.
So like you say that the world is a delusion, right? And to see people, to see God in everybody and every object. So what about the people that that you don't get good vibes from? So how do you see God in them?
No, actually God is in everybody, even right. The murderer, even the child rapist, even the child molester, even the person who went and shot so many children, God is in everybody. And God is the one that is giving him the ability to pull the trigger. If God was not there, he was, but he is misguided. God is in everybody, but because of their vasanas and wrong thoughts and wrong emotions, they are doing the wrong thing. So you don't hate them, you avoid them, you know, if you can. And if you can help them, help them. If he comes and says, you know, I need help, I have these bad thoughts, so you can maybe refer him to a psychologist or help them if you can. But if you can't, it is better to avoid them. But you don't hate anybody, because God, so other people say, oh, I hate this community, or I hate this race, or I hate these people. So all that is, or I hate this particular person, all that is doing is poisoning your mind. God is in everybody, and if the person is doing wrong, he will take care, because he's the karma faladata. He's the one who gives the result of all the karmas. And let him worry about it. Teri dunya hai tu sambhal. You know, that's how I try to live. I mean, not all the time. Sometimes, you know, we do feel, oh, this person is bad. And so constantly one has to remind oneself.
Yeah, which makes sense. I see what you're saying, that God is in everybody, but to see the good in everybody.
Yes.
That sometimes becomes
bad. Right. And actually everybody has is a mixture of good and bad. Nobody is 100% bad or 100% good. Even the person you don't dislike, I mean, the person you dislike, if you look carefully, you will find good qualities in everybody. So one has to focus on that and avoid the wrong, the evil qualities. Yes?
Although I'm Atman, I'm there in an imperfect body, imperfect mind, imperfect intellect.
True.
And all that imperfection again belongs to the person, to the one who creates it.
Right. Now that's true. As long as you are in this human body, you will have to deal with the imperfections of the body. You're absolutely right. The body has imperfections. The mind has imperfections, has good and bad emotions. Intellect has good and bad ideas, good and bad thoughts. But the goal of spirituality, as Sujata was saying, the goal of life is to slowly move towards sattva. Have sattvic emotions, have sattvic ideas. Use my body more and more for service. Of course, I have to earn and work. We are not saying you don't do that. But part of your time, part of your effort, part of your money should be given in service. And realize that the body has its imperfections. It is bound to get old. And I'm bound to get backaches. And I'm bound to have my knee replaced. And these things are going to happen. At the mind, I will have someday joy, someday sorrow. The intellect, I will have success and failure. But if I know I am Atman, then I say, okay, this equipment is bound to fail. It's like my car. I'm never going to have, you buy a new car, in 5 years it's old, and in 10 years it doesn't even move. You accept that fact, and you go get a new car. So similarly, when my body is old, I am not the body, I am the owner of the body. Like I am not the car, I am the owner of the car. So when I am the owner, then when the car is deteriorating, it's okay, I go get a new car. Or it's okay, I just manage with the car I have. If I cannot, that's all. So accept that I am imperfect. Don't expect perfection from myself. And very good point. And do not expect perfection from others. Because nobody is perfect. Only perfect is that, the Lord Himself, and that is the only thing perfect.
Like I want to take care of my body. Mm-hmm. I want to eat right food, I want to exercise.
Yes.
To keep it healthy. I think I do the same for mind and intellect.
Right.
I think that is probably the defining karma, is the, just to keep it moving in the right direction.
Right.
Healthy direction.
True.
on its own, without karma, without the right karma, there is no karma or there is a negative karma, it's not going to move towards the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
If I eat bad, the body is going to suffer.
Right.
If I watch wrong things or I'm listening to wrong things, my mind and intellect will suffer.
Exactly.
So, I think, again, the defining thing probably, what I'm understanding is that continuously working towards doing karma towards keeping body, mind and intellect healthy.
True. Very right. Perfect. Thank you. Yes.
Talking about imperfections, how can we justify our own imperfections and we accept them? When it comes to others, it's difficult to accept their imperfections. Same thing as a husband-wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
like I'll point out my husband's imperfections or where he's wrong.
Right.
But then yet I'm thinking, wait a second, you know, I'm not perfect myself.
Right.
And vice versa, even in children. So it's a task to accept others' flaws and imperfections. But yet when you look at yours, you're full of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then you justify them.
Right. Yeah, that's the ego, that I am right and the other person is wrong. And that is where the problem comes. If you see God in everybody, then you develop spontaneous love for all. And that is the difference between saints and us. So we have to go towards sainthood. So the Gita is helping us to become from humans to become superhumans. And those are the saints and the prophets, you know, people like Mirabai or Narsimha Mehta or Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya, Gurudev. So these are the people who were evolved up to that state. Even they were ordinary human beings like you and me, but they were able to evolve. So that is the spiritual journey. And one has to know that I have imperfections and everybody has. And I accept others and love them like our children. We love irrespective of their imperfections. We love them unconditionally, especially the mother. Her love for the child is unconditional. Even if the child is doing something wrong and she's correcting him, she doesn't stop loving him. So that's how one has to love everybody. Okay, thank you. We'll see you next week. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukh Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Guru Hari Om.